My name is Sergio Matos, and I am the chair of the Community Health Worker Special Primary Interest Group here at APHA. And I want to welcome you all this afternoon to a session called Policy and Practice Issues Relevant to the Training of Community Health Workers. And the content of this session is really to consider alternatives to didactic and pedantic methods, including participatory liberation education and popular education methodologies. It's a long title. All of it, which basically says that community health workers in their relationships with the families that they work with really don't approach them from a position of power or authority, but from a very different type of a relationship. And so traditional training methods that we're accustomed to don't really serve the purpose of community health workers because those methodologies don't model for them anything that's useful in their work. And so we'd like to present to you some alternatives to that type of training for community health workers. And as is our custom, we'd like to approach this whole session from a point of history. And so I'm going to invite Lee Rosenthal and Ann Willard up here to talk to you a little bit about the history of how the core competencies for community health workers have come to be described originally and where we are at the present with that issue. So please welcome Dr. Lee Rosenthal and Ms. Ann Willard.
Thank you, Sergio, and welcome. I wanted to bring greetings from Joel Meister, who was originally on our agenda for today and couldn't be here. And so playing a role, sort of covering some of the things he would have liked to touch on, as well as sharing some perspective I've had. I work now with the Community Health Worker National Education Collaborative as a co-director, and that's a U.S. Department of Education-funded project. And previously had a real opportunity earlier in the history of the field from 94 to 98 to direct the NEEKC-funded National Community Health Advisor Study. So I would draw on some of that background to place us where we are today and then turn it over to Ann for some really exciting history that's been being made in Minnesota. Community health workers are known by many names. When we did the National Community Health Advisor Study some years back, we had more than 65 different distinct titles, and they all reflect that diversity within the communities where community health workers were integral to the fabric of the health and human service system, linking communities and the health and human service system together. Community health worker, community health representative, the Indian Nations, outreach worker, promotor, and promotora de salud from where I live in El Paso, many different titles, all describing a very common role of bridging and delivering culturally competent community health information. As in any field, the community health worker field has had a long history of change. In our history, there's tremendous rich history from international roots in the U.S. since the 1950s. We've been seeing the community health worker model emerge in migrant communities within the Indian Health Service and tribal nations since 1968. There's been a formal presence, and that's the largest and oldest continuing community health worker model in our country. And in that process of change, along with it, community health worker capacity building and educational systems have been emerging and changing. In honor of today, I wanted to share a little bit of history that's helped the community health worker field and its evolution in our country. The Community Health Planning and Policy Development section, which invited the Community Health Workers Big this year to put on several sessions within the section, was actually years ago instrumental in helping our SPIG get sort of its footing in APHA. And they invited us to hold some key meetings at that juncture in the early 90s that really helped launch a lot of dialogue in the community health worker field and helped to get the SPIG, which actually was sort of a nascent organization within APHA, reemerge. As I mentioned, from 94 to 98, I directed the National Community Health Advisor Study, which not only was a research project, as it would appear with its title, but was also an organizing effort. CBPR, as we call it these days, community-based participatory research, but sort of instinctively done, we brought together leaders from across the nation who were involved in community health worker organizing and said, let's sit at the table together and try to interpret what we're gathering from the field about what community health workers do, what kind of evaluation challenges they're facing, and move forward in terms of making recommendations for how to help the CHW field evolve in the U.S. One of the key contributions that came from that study was work done by Noelle Wiggins, who interpreted and sifted through focus group data, survey data, and a lot of interviews to determine what core roles and competencies seem to be present in community health worker programs, not what was distinct in programs, but what was at the center, what were the similar roles that health worker programs were playing, what health workers were playing across the nation. Cultural mediation, health education, assuring access to care among the many. And in some programs you would see, you know, five of these roles, some all roles, but surely this was what she distilled to be at the core. And that, when that study came out in 98, we had a publication, a summary, and a full study document, which is, I don't have the website to give you, but I can work on that, sort of an oversight. But we have a couple hard copies. This was 15,000 copies have been distributed. The state of Texas adopted the skills identified in here as a part of a new credential, which we find in that state, and Ohio has credentialing of CHWs as well. So the study set some parameters in place, which continue to be evolving, but was a key starting point in some of the dialogue across the nation. This is not meant to be to scale, just my effort to sort of depict the tremendous change we see going on in the field. When we did the study from the 90s, there was an emergence of community colleges involved in community health worker education. There was a shift from on-the-job training in Boston. There was an effort funded by the City Health Department, which was a community health education training center that brought together community health workers from across the country. Jenny Miller from Community Health Works program from San Francisco was one of the early colleges working in community health worker education. And what we've seen over time is an emergence of a very new trend, which is certainly looks to be a part of the field now, is community health worker education based in community colleges. All quite distinct. No single parameters could describe what's happening in community colleges, but this is a shift as well as a move towards certification in some states and an increase in community health worker research and community health worker networks at the regional and state and national level. So as I mentioned, there is this key shift from training on the job to centralized training or some sort of effort to take what we identified in the National Community Health Advisor study was a tremendous challenge, if not burden, for community health worker programs was always working to do all of the community health worker capacity building on the job through perhaps limited funding and even percent time for program coordinators who may or may not have been CHWs themselves, but people involved in administering programs found themselves sort of gumshoe detective work, looking for curriculum, looking for resources, and so we're seeing this trend, I think, and very much in response to a need that's come from programs, which is some effort to synthesize and bring together training approaches through colleges, through training centers, and as here I mentioned, you know, the Community Health Representative Program, several years of, since the 68, working in bringing together CHRs from across the nation and training opportunities together and then back to tribal communities to deliver distinct programs. So there's lots of different models, but this centralization of training seems to be certainly a trend we're seeing. When, in response to this, we formed a Community Health Worker National Education Collaborative, which has been funded for the past 3 years to the Fund for the Improvement of Post-Secondary Higher Education. It's based at the University of Arizona with PI colleague Don Prue. And we have more than 20 community colleges from Hawaii to Minnesota to Florida, Dene Nation, all part of this collaborative, all working to refine, enhance, and improve community health worker educational curriculum based in their institutions. And again, this project has a majority Community Health Worker Advisory Council. Darrell Fox and Yvonne Lacey have chaired it. Many of the individuals here in our panel, Gracie Camarena and Romelia Rodriguez, are members of the Advisory Council. Sergio Matos is a consultant to our team, and Withorn is a technical assistant consultant, a core TA partner in the project. So lots of engagement from around the country, lots of key messages and learning, and among them, some of the things we'll highlight today, importance of interactive education. We have a key considerations document, you'll find some on the far table, that goes through what the Advisory Council determined to be sort of the most essential ingredients for college-supported education, and among them, in terms of today, you know, the importance of focus on effective instructional approaches that fully engage students becoming CHWs, adult learning approaches, liberation education, and how critical that is to the modeling that CHWs need in order to do their job, what we're not modeling today. We'd like to be down there on the floor with you doing some interaction, but that was certainly a key message from our Advisory Council and an important, I think, message for colleges, which often do that but don't always find it something they can do easily. Again, mentioned that credentialing has begin to be a train that's leaving. I mean, this Texas and Ohio are credentialing community health workers. In those states, we haven't seen the kind of community health worker leadership that, again, the Advisory Council said is a key overarching message for all colleges working in community health worker education is, where is the CHW voice? Can they be at the table from the get-go? And can you envision them as the faculty you're growing and have them be a part of the teaching team at the beginning? So we have some models coming up in other states that we hope will do credentialing in a different way. And I don't know if we'll get a chance to hear about that today from Minnesota, but there's some wonderful work going on there, Massachusetts and other states as well. The Community Health Worker National Education Collaborative Project and the key considerations is, as I mentioned, it's again some more, you know, materials over there coming to an end, but we do have an active website that's going to continue, and actually that's where you can get a link to the National Community Health Advisor Study. But this collaborative is in the process of folding in its wings. We're in the last, you know, unfunded period and getting materials ready to share widely, but we have worked very hard to think about how do we sustain the community health worker leadership that we were able to pull together in our paid advisory council structure into the community health worker field for the future at the national level. Where's leadership going to come around community health worker education and capacity building? So we're looking to the Community Health Worker Special Primary Interest Group to continue that, and a new committee has been formed. Romelio Rodriguez is the chair of that committee. It's called the Committee on Community Health Worker Education y Capacitación, and we are newly looking at efforts within the SPIG to work on resolutions within APHA, et cetera, to bring some leadership at the national level, because there's lots of interest, but not necessarily an easy place to look for guidance around what are some of the parameters that colleges would want to undertake, or freestanding education and capacity building programs. Where would we look for leadership on credentialing? So we're potentially hoping that through that committee some of that will be given voice, as well as through the new American Association of Community Health Workers, which became official in September 15th on the Potomac last year, and is growing to become an umbrella organization for community health worker networks across the country. So this is some of the history of our work in the field to date, the core competencies that the National Community Health Advisor Study put forward need to emerge. Those were in the 90s, what's happening in 2000, but that's some of the background of where we come to today and exciting work in Minnesota. Anne.
The question is, what is a community health worker? And I'm going to talk to you today about policies and practice development that we used in a college-based curriculum for community health workers. And again, I go back to the question, what is a community health worker? That was something that we had to determine before we were able to develop our curriculum. And as you know, before you develop a new profession, and this is really the birthing of a new profession, even though it's been around for many, many, many years and was pretty heavily practiced in the 1960s, you still ask the question, what is a community health worker? And there was no really professional ties that wrapped around it. So in Minnesota, that was a question that we asked before we developed our curriculum, because before you can develop what we would term core competencies around the core roles of a CHW, you really had to define what that was. And in order to do that, we had to bring together many partners. And I know most of you in this room know what competencies are, but I want to remind you that in a profession, before you build on that profession, you have to understand what those core roles are. And while we were basing our curriculum, we wanted it to be college-based for many reasons, we still needed to figure out what those real core competencies were and then how we were going to be able to teach them and then how we were going to assess them. And we also wanted to look at a curriculum that was maybe a little bit different that you see in a college-based program today, because as Sergio and Lee had stated earlier, this is a little bit different profession. They're out in the community. They're doing work. They're not sitting in an office. They're interactive. And so that type of learning that we see, that didactic type of learning, while it's very beneficial, there's other ways that you can teach really critical thinking and learning skills by using a different methodology. So we like to show this slide just because as a little humor. With any profession, unless you have that basic knowledge, you really can't teach those skills. And an example of that might be in the nursing profession, where you have a nurse that's practicing in a hospital or clinic, but once you put that nurse into a college-based practice where she becomes a faculty, she's got to learn new core competencies. She's got to build that foundation, and you just can't take somebody and put them into another profession. And so we like to use this slide to just kind of demonstrate that. I think the other thing that's really important to know about levels of learning, while we all understand that there's different types of learning styles and there's different types of teaching styles, to be most effective, I think you need to use a variety of those. And when you teach to a core group of students, you need to look at your students that are sitting in your audience or participating in your program. And one of the things that we found with the Community Health Worker Program is that we have a very extreme diverse group of students. We have people from the ages of 18 to the ages of 82. We have people from all different cultures and all different levels of learning, some coming in with a doctorate degree from their own country, some coming in and never having education before. And so when you look at that, you have to have a curriculum that you're able to look at and develop and use for that semester with the students you have in front of you. And so it's always really important, we always say, to look at your levels of learning. As you know, there's always that flow zone that we call where you learn and you retain the information that you're taught. And I think you'll see today, not only with our program but with the other model, that there's different ways that you can teach students so that you are always in that flow zone of learning. And again, it's kind of like... I guess the thing behind this is that we, you know, like I said earlier, community health workers have been around for many, many, many years. And I always think that there's, we all come to school or class with some knowledge that we learn from our life in the work that we've done in past learning and teaching. And I think we have to take advantage of some of those skills. We might not be able to gain college credit for those lifetime skills, but we can build on them. And so it's always engaging your students and not engorging them. Oh. Well, I can't help you there, I don't think. It's a cartoon. It says, "Mr. Osborne, may I be excused? My brain is full." So I'll just pass through it. Can you see that one okay? One of the things that we, when we developed the college-based 11-credit curriculum in Minnesota, we looked at different levels of assessment. And all of you that understand when you build a curriculum based on competencies, you base your assessment on those competencies so that it doesn't matter where the curriculum is taught and who teaches it, but as long as you meet those competencies through assessment. And so when we developed our curriculum, we looked at different assessment styles, and that has a lot to do, again, with that learning and teaching style. And so some of the types of assessment methods that we use were portfolios. You see those in other professions with, like, creative design programs and things like that, but you can also do it in other fields of study. Capstones. When our students go out and do their internship, at the end of their internship, they come back and they do a presentation to their other students, to the person that they did their internship under, and their faculty and teacher students. It builds a lot of different skills for them to learn, and they're able to pass on the information that they learned. A couple of the other rooms are classroom assessment and student self-assessment. We do a lot of that in our program. There you go. Do you want to see the cartoon? Can you see it? The other thing I want to mention about the assessment process with the curriculum that we use is it's very community-based. It's based on competencies, but the beauty of this is that we developed it in Minnesota, but we developed it with the idea that another state could purchase it and another community within a state could purchase it because while it's an outline of the competencies that you need to learn, you really try to implement it within your curriculum and in your community. And that's what's important about it because CHWs are different in every state and they're also different in every section of every state. We have rural community health workers, clinically based community health workers, and community-based community health workers. And so what the beauty about this curriculum is they're out in the community and they can bring back information that they learn from within that community. And I think that's also an important piece of it. It really, we use what we call the performance-based learning process, and I know if you're in nursing, that's also a way that they assess learning, and it was just one model that we used. What I wanted to talk about with the Minnesota Community Health Worker Program is how we then developed our curriculum and why we think it's successful in what we do. The first main piece in the development of our curriculum was bringing partners to the table. You can see from this that we have a long list of partners. I think the most important pieces to that partnership were that we had community health workers at the table, first of all. And for every faculty member that we had write our curriculum, we had a community health worker alongside of them. The community health workers were the ones that identified those core roles. They identified core roles that any community health worker needs to know. It didn't matter where they practiced. And that was really the foundation of our curriculum. We also wanted to make sure that we had at the table the employers, the people that would be hiring a CHW, public and private agencies, government agencies, other fields of study such as Nurses Association and the Social Work Association, because as you all know, there's always territorial issues, and so we really needed to make our case from the beginning on what is a community health worker and how they're going to benefit you, not become a territory or intrude on your territory, but how you're going to work together in an interdisciplinary method of care. Our standard curriculum, and I'll just go through it real briefly, I brought one of our modules with me, so you're welcome to look at that afterwards. But it's based on, again, the core competencies. It's 11 credits, and of those 11 credits, two of them are internships. And we also have other field-based learning that the student does within the semester. If they choose to do it in a semester, they count towards some of those internship hours. Again, I talked about the partnership and the development and our creative delivery of style, which you hopefully will understand at the end of this session, and our fieldwork and internship. The other piece I wanted to mention that hadn't been mentioned before is when we developed our curriculum, we weren't really quite sure if it would be college-based or non-college-based, and through our partnership, we decided that it was important to put it in college-based. We wanted to credit to the students so that they could take that and move forward into other levels of training if they so desired to do so. We had figured that we were hoping 33% of our students would go on into higher levels of workforce in healthcare because you all know the shortages in healthcare, so we thought it was important to be able to open a pathway for diverse students. The turnover rate in the school I work for, which is Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, was extremely high for diverse students. It was like 76%, so that's a huge failure rate. So we also wanted to develop a curriculum which was a stepping stone with a little bit different method of teaching to help retain some of those students. To date, we have a success rate of about 93% of our students that go all the way through our curriculum, and I have to say about 55% of them have continued on. And I don't mean that they continued on away from the community health worker. Some of them have. But some of them have just decided to take extra classes on top of just a CHW role. And so we're really happy about the success of that. And we feel like this is kind of a curriculum that has opened the door for diverse populations. We also have what we developed is called specialty training tracks. While our curriculum, our core curriculum, is credited based, when a CHW is hired into a field, they may be working for a community clinic or for a nonprofit, and say they're working in populations in diabetes specific to the Hmong population. And so what we've developed are other what we call pathways of training. So if that CHW is working with diabetic clients, they can then go to the specialty training track, which is just about diabetes. So our skills-based learning as it relates to chronic disease and other specific issues are what we call those pathways. And we've developed to date 6 of them. We have oral health, mental health, heart and lung, stroke. We're working on an aging one, and I always forget one, a maternal child. So we're really excited about that. We to date have 5 of our schools that are implementing our curriculum. And we've had, I think the question was asked this morning, we ran our pilots in 2005, so we've run our curriculum for 4 semesters, and we've graduated 211 students. What I wanted to demonstrate here was, we talked about the core competencies, and I wanted to show you our components. So for instance, you see the 6 components that we have. Each component is part of a credit or a 2-credit class, depending on the length of the module itself. And in each component is our competencies. Today I brought the coordinating documentation and reporting module, and if you have time afterwards and you want to look at it, you're welcome to. But then we list within our curriculum our objectives, which are really our core competencies of what we evaluate, what we want our students to achieve. And it's, like I said, it's in a unique curriculum. It's a little bit different. It has an instructional map for faculty. It's quite easy to use. It has assessment pieces, and it also has handouts and activities for faculty to be able to follow and use. We also have a handbook on the internship piece. The part that I wanted to talk about that's related to the politics then is about how we used our curriculum to be able to achieve reimbursement for the role of CHWs in the state of Minnesota. What we did was we looked at other states and the curriculums that they use and the credentialing that was going on nationally, and decided that we didn't think that nationally credentialing was the answer to moving forward the role of community health workers as it related to workforce. What we saw was the sustainability in the funding of community health workers, which was really the key to success in their role and integrating them into the workforce. And so what we did was we lobbied at our national, at our capital in Minnesota last session to reimburse community health workers, and we based it on our curriculum because we felt like our curriculum was really the core to the success of a CHW, and they were graduating with these wonderful skills and working as a team with other healthcare professions to achieve and serve the underserved communities in Minnesota. And we were successful in doing that, and our legislation bill did pass. And so as of January 1st in 2008, the role of community health workers will be reimbursed in the state of Minnesota for Medicaid, GMAC, and what we call Minnesota Cares, which is a insurance in Minnesota. Do you want me to ask any questions at this time, or I guess we don't have time, so I'm going to forward it and we can ask questions later. Thank you.